The following podcast contains scenes of graphic violence, abuse, conspiracy theory. I've forgotten whatever I wrote. Wait. Conspiracy. And oh my god, so much gossip. Viewer's discretion is advised. And there's so much tea in this episode. Not so much, just one major tea. Just tune in for it. Hello, community. Welcome to the 21st episode, which is gonna be the 7th to the last episode of the season 1. And I thought I should break this news to you that the podcast is gonna have multiple seasons. Season 1 is about to end at, I believe, 27 episodes. And season 2 will start just like with 1 week of a break, and then we'll continue with the season 2, and I'm not sure how many episodes that's gonna be, so there's that. But hello, my beautiful people, to the 21st episode. Who thought we'll be making it this far? I thought we'll be making this far. If I make the 28th episode, that is the first episode of season 2, that would be the thing. I'm like, oh really, we made this far? No. Yeah, so hi. And today, in today's episode, we are gonna be covering the case of, well, basically two things. One would be Aokigahara Forest in Japan, and I'm 100% sure that's not how they pronounce it, and the Kamar Davang Range in Serbia. So, yeah, and it's gonna be cold, it's gonna be fun, and it's gonna have so many interesting things. Talking about interesting things, let's jump into the fishy news. So the first headline reads, "Police swarm home of modified mom who left her corpse outside." You read this and you're like, what? What the fuck? How did she leave her corpse outside? When you further read the article, you'll find, "The fiasco was sparked by a dummy wrapped in garbage bags and a duct tape that the mother of two had used as a spooky decoration at holiday kids' party." And what kind of party this is? I mean, it's my kind of party, my kind of kids' party, but just corpses of kids instead of other people. Anyway, I mean, like in a normal person's kids' party scenario, a human-sized dummy, what are those kids even knowing with the said dummy? I believe the reason is that they're basically diabolical. But let's find out. "I arrived home from school, run to see two police cars driving away from outside my home. Bedfordshire's Carla House, 28, told the Triangle News of her near arrest. Cara, you really need to learn how to pack your shit properly. I mean, not your shit, your stuff. Like, I'm not sure at this point this woman would, like, basically wrap her shirt up in plastic and give it to people. Like, you really need to look at these pictures. And it actually looks like a dead body, but its head is just a little big and there's no neck. So it's like a neckless dead body." Lame joke. Moving on. "You might have cut them," the police reportedly replied. "This suggestion applies even if it was a dead body. Like, you might have cut them." Of course she did. And she said, "Oh, did you check my bins?" She recounted, added that they looked a little concerned and they were like, "Should we?" And I really like how they're like, "Should we really check your bins?" And I mean, fuck yeah, check the bags, check the bin, check the house. Even if there's a body, you should check everything. And first open the bag to see even if it's a proper body. And I do not know what is the fuck wrong with the birds around. Oh, I actually know this. Let me get back to you about this. It is gonna be a lot of tea. Anyway, back to the article that I was reading. I was just gonna say that, oh my god, these birds are making so much noise. But it is so much more than just so much noise, you know. Anyway, the mother later said, the article said, the flustered mother told them that she was asked to chop it up and get rid of it, but had ultimately decided to put it in the shed with the others until the next Halloween. And that makes me think, like, if it's a really, really a dead body and not a garbage bag, the flustered mother told them, I was asked to chop it up and get rid of it, but ultimately I decided to put it in the shed with the others until next Halloween. Mom goals. Okay, Anyway, moving on to the second one. Twin refuses to be the best man for his identical brother because he's marrying his ex. I mean, yeah, it makes complete sense. Imagine the entire conversation happening. Like, hey bro, I'm marrying your ex. You won't be able to be the groom, but can you be the best man? And the other guy is like, yeah, no. I mean, this is also a very good script for a telenovela, you know. And like the article further says that a man has sparked a debate after refusing to be his twin brother's best man because his identical sibling is marrying his ex. You don't need to spark a debate on your house in matters like these, you know. If I spark debates in my house on about like random issues, I'll die debating. I'll need 10 more lives to debate for that particular life. And then I'll have issues for 10 extra lives, which I need to debate about. And yeah, I have 10 souls, but I cannot really spend 11 lives debating with my parents. And in the end, me being like, all right, whatever you say is right. So I'm going to leave now because they never understand, do they? That's what family is all about. Learning to ignore is and moving on is a bliss. Let me read the whole story and then let's see. Also, it has started to get really windy. So if you keep on hearing any of those sounds, that's most probably the wind making weird noises all around. So don't come getting at me like, oh my God. Anyway, so the 21-year-old man has remained anonymous, said that he dated a girl 5 years earlier when they were both 16. They strayed the path after 2 years, but when time came, When the time came for them to go to university, the pair decided to split as the man didn't want to stay local. His ex, however, stayed in the same town. When the man came back from university, he discovered his identical twin had a girlfriend, but it was shocked to discover that it was the same girl that he had dated. I mean, wasn't the girl shocked to see the same guy? I mean, she would, like, I don't know. I mean, the girl, for very sure, has a very, very specific type. For God's sake, they're identical twins. Like, how did somebody imagine that this won't be awkward for anybody involved in the conversation? The article even says, note that my girlfriend was very close with my family, so this was very hard on my family as well. When returning home from my first year of college, my brother surprised me with the news that he had been dating a girl for 6 months now. And I mean, if that's not enough surprise for you that your brother is actually dating somebody for 6 months, but it's also like, oh, I'm also dating your ex. And then to the point that it's an identical twin, like, and the family was part of it. Imagine the mother of the twins going like, all right, so you're dating this son now. And she's like, yeah, now the other one, same face, but it's not that I have a type. Yeah, girl, I totally believe you surely don't have a type. I'm not kidding. If she kills somebody and she's like, I didn't kill them. I'm like, yeah, this bitch, she lies. We gotta arrest her. Damn, that sound. Who the fuck was that? Anyway. So, yeah, that's it. Ad segment, whatever. Go knock yourself out. Okay, I hope you enjoyed that ad. I really do. I'm out of transitions for this episode, so bear with me. Can you hear the bird coo in the background? So there's an actually very interesting story to that, which I came to know about 3 hours before recording this episode. And I was like, yeah, what? So yesterday, and today I'm recording the podcast in the middle of the day, so there's going to be anyway a lot of bird chirps, but this specific bird is like an actual bird, it's the nightingale. And if you remember, I kept on screaming that why the fuck is this bird screaming at like 2 or 3 a.m. in the morning. So yesterday somebody was walking out, somebody heard this noise and they felt that this sound does not correspond to a bird. That person walked out and they saw a group of 4 to 5 people who were clicking pictures of the vehicles which were parked outside and just houses and stuff. And they were making these coo sounds to each other. And as soon as that guy came outside of his house, he turned on the lights. One of them, who was supposedly like 10 meters from my house behind this huge ass tree, which I have clicked pictures of like on my Instagram, and there a dude was standing and he started to like ooh, 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 constantly and real fast. So this is maybe like an entire grand scheme plot, something of like the entirety of the neighborhood and being under attack by, I don't know, thieves or something. And my entire freaking podcast is filled with their noises of like planning out how to, if any of this is true, how to commit this crime, if any crime is to be committed. So that is actually pretty scary, but interesting at the same time. So there's that. You have actually been on, I was like calling the podcast haunted, but it's not haunted. It's like actually a true crime documentary thing. Maybe I can get famous through this. I do not know. But anyway, so on Out of the Blue, like this was also the part of Out of the Blue, but what I wanted to talk about today. It's called Aoki Gahara. I was actually looking up the pronunciations of it because I just recorded it a little bit and I felt that my pronunciation was not right. It was, because I'm always right. But I came to this video on YouTube and it had a comment by somebody called Luke Skywalker Jedi Knight. And his comment reads, "I made a severe and continuous lapse in my judgment. I don't expect to be forgiven. I'm simply here to apologize. What we came across that day in the woods was obviously unplanned. The reactions you saw on the tape were raw. They were unfiltered. None of us knew how to react or feel. I should have never posted the video. I should have never put the cameras down and stopped recording what we were going through. There's a lot of things I should have done differently, but I didn't. And for that, from the bottom of my heart, I'm so sorry. I want to apologize to the internet. I want to apologize to anybody who has seen the video. I want to apologize to anyone who has been touched by mental illness or depression or suicide. But most importantly, I want to apologize to the victim and his families. For my fans who are defending my actions, please don't. I don't deserve to be defended. The goal of my content is always to entertain, to push boundaries, to be all inclusive. In the world I live in, I like to share almost everything I do. The intent is never to be heartless, cruel, or malicious. Like I said, I made a huge mistake and I don't expect to be forgiven. I'm here to apologize. I'm ashamed of myself. I'm disappointed of myself. And I promise to be better. I will be better. Thank you." And I was like, what? And most probably, I think this person, like from the looks of it, went to the forest and recorded something there. I'm not sure. I don't understand what they're trying to say. I'm not sure what happened. But I read it and there were like sudden chills in my, which went through my heart or something. And I decided, all right, this is interesting. I think you should hear that. But anyway, for Aoki Gahara, we'll have to go to Japan. And I believe most of you would have heard of this forest, and it's called the Suicide Forest or the Sea of Trees. I do not remember what was its Japanese equivalent when it's translated to Sea of Trees. There are like three movies which are made on this. I've never watched any of them like completely. But yes, it's a very, very famous forest. Now, I was planning to make this entire episode on this forest. However, there are certain problems which I'll tell you about as we go further. This forest is in the northwestern flank of Japan's Fuji Mountain. On like 30 square kilometers or 12 square miles of hardened lava, which was laid down in the last eruption in 864 BCE, I think it was. Yeah, 864 BCE. The western edge of the forest is said to have caves which are filled with ice in winter and is a very popular destination for tourists and school trips. Now, imagine you don't know enough about this. It's a forest which is called the Suicide Forest and you're getting school trips here. Priorities. Yeah, I started clapping. I'm becoming more and more drag as I'm recording this, podcast. Yeah. And the area in itself has actually some really cool geographical phenomenons. Like there are ice caves which remain frozen throughout the year because of the lava sitting there, holes in the ground, which act like shelter from the rain since it is made out of lava. So it has a lot of iron. So compasses don't work here. So if you go in the forest and you are trying to look for a direction using a compass, you won't be able to find that. Then honestly, the place is absolutely magical and beautiful just to look at it from afar. And honestly, to be there too, other than like some random dead bodies you might come across. So it has moss covered roots. The trees are huge and beautiful. And we know that I like huge things. It is eerie. It's beautiful. It is even more beautiful the more that you look at it. I'm not even kidding. I'll buy land there and build a little house and live there forever with my 79 cats. What does that sound? I don't know. Anyway, so a brief history of this forest and why it's called the Suicide Forest is basically in the period leading up to 1988. I am not sure from what period to what period because it was nowhere mentioned. And that is the entire problem with this specific project, no matter how popular it is. From the English Google that I was able to find, I was not able to find a lot, and it's not that I couldn't, it's more like I didn't want to go that deep into like what I normally sometimes research into is like I pick up words from Japanese, I'll open Japanese websites and then I'll translate them and read them. I tried it with a couple and those were also very dead indie, so I gave up and I did not. So I put it in out of the blue. I'm really sorry for that. I might cover it soon, like when I say soon, like after a very long time, when you won't remember about it anymore. But yeah, so anyway, still 1988, there were 30 suicides on an average which occurred there every year. In 1999, the number increased to 74, and the most on record is 78, which was in 2002. However, this was very stupid because all the websites are like, the maximum number is 78 on 2002, but in 2003, 105 were found. I was like, yeah, that means 2002 wasn't that high. I cannot speak anymore. The 2003 had the deadliest year. It had the maximum number of bodies found. But there are not enough stats on it on the English Google. And the last thing that I was able to find was that of 2010, wherein 200 people allegedly attempted to commit suicide and 54 of them were actually able to do that. So this is about it. Now, a little bit about the Japanese society in general. They have a high tolerance to suicide. For example, I'm talking of my memory and my memory of like, I don't know, years back, that there was some finance minister, somebody in the parliament of Japan, a minister, a politician who committed suicide because he was not able to do well at his duties. And the country actually applauded his actions because he knew where he was wrong and he knew the only way he could correct himself is by dying, and he did that. Now, I by no means say that suicide is right or not. I'm not saying anything. I'm just telling you what this society thinks, and I do think I don't want to be one of those people who goes on to say that, or it's not your life is not yours to commit suicide and it's a cowardly thing to do, because that is just not the right thing to say. I just want to say that I love you, even if I do not know who you are. And if you ever feel like ending it, you can reach out to me. You can reach out to anybody. There are like helpline numbers out there. They can talk to you. It's not the best of ideas that you've had is what I would like to tell you. So anyway, as I was saying, the Japanese society itself is, there's so much fucking background noise, but what can we do? We slept too much and we overslept and now it's like early morning and the world is running. I cannot stop the world from running because of you, unless and until I have enough money and I'm Elon Musk. I'm like staggering all over the place today. So the Japanese society itself is very tolerant towards suicides, as I told you guys. And duty is one of those important things. Like, the maximum number of people actually commit suicide due to mental illnesses, both mental and physical, because of illnesses, both mental and physical. That was about more than 50% of reasons. Up to 17%, that is the second highest, is because people are not able to provide for their family, or they have a very high debt, or just like financial insecurities and so on. So Aokigahara has become a hub for suicide, mostly because it was also romanticized a lot in Japanese literature. So there was some writer that I read about, I've not written his name, who wrote a book on this, and then in the ending the lovers committed suicide there. So yeah, not only this, there's a lot, like, I mean a lot of folklore surrounding the forest, and like each and every article that you read, it will say folklore, theories, legends, history, ancient. But do we find any? Do they quote any? Do they give any references? No. And I don't know if it's my research that was lacking, or I do not know the dark web properly enough to like function it, but this was so stupid. Everybody was like, this is how haunted. And I'm like, yeah, really? Tell me how. Yeah, we do not know that. You need to, I don't know, fuck yourself. And then I'm like, yeah, fuck you too. So that was a major problem with this one. Though I really want to cover Japanese horror story, and I might soon. But something which I read, which is kind of paranormal, is that, and today's episode, honestly, the entirety of it is kind of paranormal, but not super paranormal. And since I couldn't put it into the category of, how do we say, what is the other thing that I do? True crime. Since it was not really true crime, because it was not one person violently killing other people, most probably, I wasn't able to put it into true crime. So it's kind of paranormal, not a totally paranormal episode. I should have said this like earlier, but whatever. So people who come to kill themselves in this forest, they do this thing that they curse the forest by attaching personal belongings and personal artifacts to the trees, because they want to curse the world which caused them this much suffering, and they want the world to die. So a lot of people do say that all this negative energy might, or most probably, would have created some kind of entity there, or if not created, would have empowered another one. So there needs to be some poltergeist activity and such. But I was not able to find any. I was not even able to find the names of people who committed suicide or all those things, which is an actually good thing, because that is private information. But there was not, and there's a lot of talk on it, but there's not enough research on it that I could have covered. So there's that. Anyway, that's my half-assed reporting on the most tempting thing I've ever found. And I really want to go cry in the corner because I was not able to make this the entire episode. But the story that we are going to be covering today is called Dark Moon. Before we get onto the story, yesterday I got like two different ice cream flavors. And I thought, do you want me to talk about ice cream and like a separate ice cream flavor for each time that I record a podcast? Just now I ate chocolate mint ice cream, which kind of feels like toothpaste and chocolate, but frozen with milk. And when you eat it, your entire face, but it's still toothpastey. But when you like take it all in, it's still a little, some kind of chocolate remains and some kind of saliva remains. So yeah, so but the problem is these ice creams are actually very stupidly expensive, like $10, and I really don't have that much money. So I would really like you to start promoting the podcast so I can eat ice cream almost every week, like good ice cream every week. So yeah, moving on to the story. It's called Dark Moon, and the reason it's called Dark Moon, because the date that I've selected for it, which is not historically accurate, is August 10th, 1991, which was a dark moon. So the time that I've given is 3:57. Now, one thing with this timestamp, the problem is that this timestamp wouldn't really make sense by the end of the story. And by the end of it, and by, I know this is because I've highlighted it and commented it on the side of it, that by the end of it, it kind of feels more of an early morning vibe. So imagine the first few paragraphs take 2 to 3 hours, and the rest of it happens on its own. I do not know. Anyway, not 2 to 3 hours specifically, like less than an hour or two when the sun comes out. Just forgive me. Okay, so I start. I run my hands on whatever that I'm sitting on. Zeltani Korke. Ooh, a crow. Gorkin was it. Hey, can you hear this crow? It's like, oh, it's cute. Ouch. Oh, wow. I'm starting again. I run my hands on whatever that I am sitting on. Zildani Gorkin was it. Ouch. The stupid plant. At least the stupid just bag with white pubes for a face isn't looking at me. What about? So, to make a little sense, the plant name is a very important part plant in Serbia, which would actually make a lot more sense when I tell you the true life inspiration. And the jizz bag with old white pubes is Jutrobog, the uncle of Sun, the Salvic, yes. The Salvic deity for the moon. So it's the dark moon. So he's not there. So yeah, and he looks like Odin. So like a jizz bag and having white pubes for a face, because that's what we millennials call our old people, because we are very respectful. Anyway, I continue. I hear these sobs like children, not the annoying human ones, the nice ones. Plant children, it feels. I glide off to the ground, my feet land on my little craft. My white hair glide over the tangled branches of bush like snakes. They follow me behind. Longer the hair, older, wiser, stronger. I'm not really sure about the latter two, really. But whatever. I glide with them and they glide with me. I glide to the children. They're all broken by the stick. I don't understand the urge to harvest the leaves, but I can never understand the urge. I understand the urge to harvest the leaves, but I can never understand the urge to break the bones. Little would they help. No. Now, basically, what this comes from is normally, I've seen a lot of people when they're taking off herbs and when they are in the forest, they tend to break the stem with the leaves. Like, you need the leaves, so just take away the leaves, not the stem. Because if you break the stem, it's going to take a lot more time for the plant to grow and repair itself. So that's what's basically happening here. And I would like you to imagine this character wearing, like, white clothing and, like, hair which are 7 times as much longer as they are, and their hair are just like really silky. They never get tangled into anything, and they're white, like I don't know, a white Maleficent of sorts. Not white skin white, like color white Maleficent, because white is more ghostly than any other colors. Why am I making this harder for myself? Please ignore everything that I just said, and if it sounded offensive, just ignore it all. Anyway, I extended my hand to the oldest of the slope, on the slope. The biggest human was shouting and laughing. A family is like what they seemed. Annoying and annoyed is what they actually were. You know I love the way I use the word annoying. It's so Alexis. I love it. So annoying is one of my most favorite words, if nothing else. But where am I? And there's a sound in my background, like, it's somebody's grass cutter. And yeah, and now there's a honk sound. There's supposed to be a citywide lockdown at the moment, and nobody's allowed to get out of their house technically, but the people do not know how to stay indoors. It's very annoying. But yes, I grabbed a little pinch of my hair that I tidily tucked behind my ears. On my right hand, I concentrated the air to twirl for me, to make this little dagger, to cut those silken hair. They start to levitate from my hand and start to act as webs and snakes, snake-like webs, to the bruised little branches from the silk fill. And my silk fills those creases, the creases of broken, the creases a dozen. I know, I'm gonna go half boiled fixing all these plants today. It was only the last couple inches of my hair that were left as I felt a little rock flying towards me. It did not hit me, no. It simply grazed past. It crossed the veil of my hair, made me lose my balance. The rock that I was on, my little giddy platform shifted. My mind and I both fell to the stone, the rock bottom, I think. For the first time ever that I was born, I fell. I looked at the direction of the creature who dared throw it. Tall and strong is what he thought of himself. I mean, they think that they are God, that they are the biggest thing in the world. But what I wish is death to them. I extended both my hands to the sky. I touched both my middle fingers to my palms and pointed up to the heavens. I lifted my left leg up, twisted my back a little, and voila, I started to levitate. As I levitated, I could feel the blood, the energy gushing through me, the air supporting me, and I danced and I danced as slowly and slowly I flew and flew and I flew. As I was above, as I was over the ground, up until my hair was just an inch above it all, at a good height, I could really look at the stone thrower. But at this height too, I was just near where his heart is at. I really do not know from where my instinct to destroy suddenly came up from, but I really knew that I wanted to. Maybe it was a derivative of how these creatures have the instinct to change everything so heavily when all they have to do is simply traverse an area. Why do you need to harvest more than that you need? Why do you need to throw rocks out of the way when you don't need to? You are tourists, you are guests, you come here and you go. You're not allowed to make changes which will last forever and create problems and rather than solutions. I was planning to give more commentary on this like little paragraph, but now I feel like I don't want to do it. So she's flying up and she says, I passed the other broken bushes. I know what's to come. Will more than just break a few branches. I apologize to them and I say, another season, the next one, I promise. More flowers, more seeds, better yield for decades to come. I could see the bushes and feel them nod, giving me their consent for destruction and annihilation. I glide over the chunk of metal under me, my hair flying out like spider webs and creating a tent of sorts all around me. I was at my tallest, my hair were but still barely at his heart. Well, I needed to go higher. I raised my hands again to the sky, asking it like clockwork to rise me up again. I was rising and rising almost near his shoulder, just a little bit more, but I could feel the blood gushing through my brains. The blood even came out a little bit through my nose. I tasted it and I knew that this is the calamity which I've decided upon. The calamity which is gonna fly up too high. But now I am rising, not to be limited by simply little things and things which will soon cease to exist. It is more, I think, than just creating terror. I mean, it is the human polity to rule with terror and fear to keep in check. But I don't think it really works, like this dog who keeps on barking. But the gratification it gives, the temporal peace that it promises, it is what I and anybody can kill for. Wait, that's what I am going to do. So, you know what, I was just reading it and I suddenly felt like Daenerys Targaryen, the white hair, just like really, 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 really small and more mystical and like a fairy godmother type, and a lot of shit happened to her, but like this character was nice in the beginning and now suddenly she's like the worst thing these people would have ever seen. So yeah. That's it. That would be a core, really. I just realized. I can't help but etch a smirk on my face as I levitate over his head now. His hair shift and move ever so little as I keep on flying over them. I am careful not to touch him. That would be a darn bitch to wash out. The Sully. My hair touch him though. Everywhere they need to. And work every crevice to find the little node. Et voila, they found it, near his elbow. Good work. They enter him through his node and I can feel them getting stained a pretty red now, like the cherry blossom of my cousin's blooming, the moon casting shadows. Oh, the doom. And I look at Bickle. And he begins to roar, my good little brother. The thunder begins to come around too. She didn't like these creatures too. The rain, the clouds, even the snow, all come down just for the dramatics of it, you know. The cold, though, decided not to be bothered, but who needs them anyway? These are anyway those special effects. The death, the blood is all in my domain. August 10th, 1991. 10:48 a.m. Slippy drab, drippy drab, lewd brown, wash them down the heavy mountains, the blood, the blue skies, the petty god, the strong fire, bring it down, mix it up, create and destroy, rain, rain, come with your might, bring down all your blight. Yes, I actually wrote this little spell to just bring down flood in names of rain, and this is the spell slash the rhyme that a little creature sung for the rain to come down and bring its blight. And I actually love it. And I like how, I believe it was the last time too, that I kept on singing bang bang. So I don't know, maybe this is one of my new styles now. Anyway, continuing with the story, and this is the last paragraph. They're all wit, it's perfect. And still on top of him, he couldn't really sleep well, you know. He claimed he was too wit too, everyone concluded. My hair were deep enough in him and in almost who hugged him before sleeping. But there's I, one left. But it's fine for her to be the one alive. I mean, how else will the terror even flow? Slash, slash, cut, cut. Drain, drown, rain, blood. Oh, this like nails, hips, something, something. That song. All flow down, the hysterics. I can't help but laugh. Him in the middle, my hair spread out across, through him, across everybody. My hair ricocheting. Oh, how the ricochet. Wait. Hysterics. Longer than ever, all five of them ricochet. Play the dance of death pretty well. They bleed from their eyes, off their ears, gag from their mouth, and die in fear. Oh, how they play, oh, how they play. Like animals in a circus and zoos they create. And animals in circus and the zoos. Is that how you pronounce Z-O-O-S? Okay, I think so. Zeus. And that's Zeus. Ah, it's Zeus. Okay, I got confused. So yeah, and whatever. So I fucked up the ending of the story. That was the ending of the story. I was actually going to put in more details in the deaths part and stuff, but I ended up putting that in the research. So I decided to keep that thing there and this thing here, because we need to equally spread the gory thing in the podcast, otherwise it would be just a little too much. Anyway, so as I told you before, so today's case is a lot more conspiracy, like the first half of the out of. I still hear that coo-hoo, and I'm like, yeah, that's a thief. Maybe I'm going to die and that's going to be the next true crime podcast of all the main important podcasts. So, oh God, people are playing music so loud. Who plays music so loud so early in the morning? What's wrong with them? Anyway, so today's case, have I said this line already? It's a lot more conspiracy. Yeah. So what I'm going to be trying to tell you is hard facts, and there's a lot of rabbit holes, and like when I was even researching, there were a lot of people with a lot of theories, with a lot of things to say, but I am not covering any of those lots. And yeah, please honk because I'm speaking all of those things, because I'm not sure if they make any sense and if I should tell you guys about them. But if you are into them, if you want to read them on, like, the research is out there and the research is actually very ample. So where this is located is the Kamar Damang mountain range in Burtaya, Serbia. The altitude is 2,396 meters. The timestamp is the very first week of August 1993. The sole survivor of the incident is Valentina Shipchenko. And she never really spoke about the incident properly until 2018. And the article that hypes it up basically says, she tells a story after a lasting silence of 25 years. It is scare and angel away these events. This is the tale of Khmer Dabang. So this place actually goes with a lot of names. Not technically a lot of names, a lot of spellings, because it's kind of translated more or less into English. It is Khmer Dabang by C-H-M-A-R. It's Khmer Dabang, H-A-M-A-R, and Khmer Dabang with K-H-M-A-R. Since a lot of times C-H will not be registered by my brain as a K. So for the reference of the research, I am using Khmer Dabang, but I feel that C-H-A-M-A-R is the correct spelling, etymologically speaking. Anyway, so this place is basically totally beautiful. It's undyingly pure. It's fatally amazing, toxically scenic, and dangerously deadly, as you'll know. Another thing about this case is all the research that I did, all the podcasts that I heard, all the YouTube videos that I saw, they just say one thing. It is impossible to find stuff on it. The research is so sparse. But it is so easy. It was really easy to do research on this. It was readily available. I did take help from a friend of mine, Daria Casanova, who's an amazing person, and she's very smart, to read some, like, a newspaper link website. It had things in Russian and I wanted a couple paragraphs to be confirmed because the Google translated thing did not make a lot of sense. So she helped me with this. But other than that, it was pretty easy researching. Like, not an easy, but it was not that bad. It was like, yes, the case was not like super duper hype. Not everybody knows about this case, but it is rather popular. It's not that it's a very obscure one or anything by that measure. So the group that we are going to be talking about is called, it's not called anything, it consisted of 7 members, and it was led by Lyudmila Ivanova Casanova. What the fuck just happened? Who died? I don't know. Something. Rain makes everything falls down, I've realized. Anyway, she was 41 at the time and she was an expert survivalist. She was like super duper hardcore, like the mother to Bear Grylls and stuff, from what I could read about her. She was into like the most testing of circumstances, and like the one of the articles that I asked my friend Daria to translate, it said that she was somebody who could bind the group together. She was a good leader and those good normal things, you know, she was the best out there. The other group members had their ages ranged from 15 to 24. The eldest one was Tatiana Filipenko, who was 24. Then it was Alexander Kaysen or Sasha, who was 23. And he was often referred to as the adopted son of Korovina. Now, Sasha is a name which is very popular as like a pet name for the name Alexander, and I didn't know that was a thing. So yeah, then there was Denis Shevochnik, who was 19, Valentina or Valya Uchenko, who was 17, and Victoria Vika Zalesova, who was 16. Now, Victoria was one of the, like, it was actually cool that a few articles I read, they were like, they didn't speak a lot about others. They were like, all right, this girl, she was 16 and she used to complain so much. Like, she all of them made her sound like this Twitter angsty teenager who does not really know anything about anyone but have an opinion, and they want to put that opinion in your face and make it your problem. Anyway, according to the sources, like some sources, they started the trek on 1st August, and some other sources say they started it on 2nd. So it's like one day plus minus according to what and who you're reading about. So what they embarked upon was a trek off the mountain range. It was a level 3 trek, and there are total 5 levels, so it was the third most difficult level. But these people, they were like super duper experience. Like, Alexander was a son, the 15-year-old child was also the 15-year-old person was also very experienced for their age, and everybody other than the Twitter cribber Victoria was very experienced and like knew how to work their way on this. They were also like defined as a family, because before this they had been training to complete the entire trek properly, so they had a good bond. So they started their trek from a village called Murino, and then they went to the Langutai Gate Gorge, and then to the highest peak of their climb, that was the Kanhulu Peak or something, but that is like as high as 7,134 meters. Why am I reading all thousands as hundreds? I do not know, but it sounds big. And one random fact which I actually found, that these people, they love natural remedies of sorts. So before setting foot to their trek, they collected golden root, which is a basically Serbian medicinal plant. And so they did that, and that's on which I made the entire story, that they angered the fairy who guarded those plants and the entire thing happened. So yeah, but collecting these plants in this manner would actually make my brain say that these people, like, despite every information that we know, were very known with the environment. They knew what they were getting into, and they knew how to navigate that properly with the resources that they had around themselves. Buts are for pooping. So continuing, the weather forecast when they started actually promised clear sunny skies, and Lyudmila and her students were, like, you know, one of the three or two hiking groups in the area. The second group was actually led by Lyudmila's daughter Natalia. And these two groups had planned to meet up on August 5th, when the hiking routes were to cross. So the journey is something that this entire group, like allegedly two or three or more groups, had been planning for a while, as I told you a while back. So on August 4th, allegedly the last good day of the trip for Lyudmila's group. As the first 2 days went better than planned, they covered a lot of ground, and then suddenly the weather started to go bad. Well, less than decent, I would say. They were hit with a rainstorm, and according to some sources, freezing rain and light snowfall. Their trek took them to the, like, at this position, they were at the border of two major climate zones. That's the West Serbian Plain and Magnolia. What's Magnolia? There's something cool with the word Magnolia. Anyway, so south to the Lake Baikal, that was also the kid, the younger brother to the fairy or the cryptic in my story, was the Mangol area, and these zones create a cyclogenesis a lot of times. Though it is very difficult to say what exactly were the weather conditions and the air conditions at the time, because of the lack of documentation and the internet was not that big of a deal at that time. But according to most sources that I was able to read, the average temperature, the lowest of the average lows, I do not know, was 11 degrees Celsius, and the highest of the highest highs was 21 degrees Celsius. So it is cold, but it is not that cold. It's not cold enough for ice, according to my understanding of ice. But yeah, so that was like what all the sources basically talked about. Moreover, in Serbia, the summer months actually have a lot of rainfall, and I would assume if somebody like Lyudmila, who's so smart with everything, would have packed with the possibility of carrying insulated gear and such, given the weather is not, like, really predictable. Even with the weather analysis of the day, weather cannot be properly predicted, right? And, like, I was actually making a corollary with the previous hiking trail accident that I covered, the girls of Panama. So those girls, when they went, they were wearing, like, shorts and shoes, and they were, like, nice and clanky. They did not prepare for the hike, really. But these people, they were very experienced. So that's, like, a major difference between both of them. So anyway, heavy rainfall, stuff. They were kind of in a rut. So during this time, when all this started to happen, they made a camp wherein all of them basically died later on a plateau which was devoid of any natural cover from the elements, like trees and such. And a lot of people were going, like, there was a grove 4 kilometers away from the place which could have acted like a safe space and would have been a much safer choice. Some local rescuers even said that there was another option for the group that almost 30 minutes from where they were at, there was a resting place where a special platform was erected specially for the tourists who come and then are lost, so they can find dry firewood there, a place to rest, get dry, and da 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 da. So, but a lot of people speculate that the reason she did not choose either of those two places was because she wanted to teach the students how to survive in the most devastating of climates. But my brain, while I was just reading it, I was just like, maybe she did it because it was the safest choice, actually. Because, all right, so the trees around my house, whenever it rains, almost like one or two of them fall. So we all park our cars in like away from like the direction of the tree and such to, I don't know if it applies in both cases, but that's what we do. So if she decided to go at the plateau where there were only rocks and like no trees and grass, maybe it was a smarter choice, because if the cyclone was bad enough, the rainfall was bad enough, it could have caused for the trees to fall on the group and killing every one of them. So I would actually support her decision at this point. Like, maybe it was the smarter thing to do. Though they spent the night more or less and they weren't able to sleep properly. And there was, talking about not being able to sleep properly, a few people that I heard or read from said that maybe they did this because of the snow and the rainfall, the packs and everything became really heavy and they were exhausted, and they decided like, all right, we are here and we are not moving an inch from this place, so this is where we are going to set up our camp, and voila. But that also is kind of weird given their experience and exercise and all those things. But anyway, we do not know for what reason they ended up in this rather debatable spot to spend the night. At 11 a.m. on August 5th, after packing up their things, Alexander walked up to one of the tents to one of the people and said that he was feeling really ill. He decided to walk because he was like, all right, this does not matter, which actually adds up to my hypothesis that they wouldn't have stopped just because of exhaustion, like at a unkind place, you know. But he decided to walk despite feeling like really ill, and after a few kilometers he started to feel like really clumsy, which is basically me all the time, and he started to stumble and fall until he became so weak and like so disoriented, I'd say, that everybody in the group had to carry the things that he had like his packing and stuff. Now they were like, all right, let's walk. And then suddenly he began to bleed from his eyes and started foaming at his mouth. He fell to the ground and started to convulse and went into some kind of shock. Everybody went still and I was like, oh my God. But also, like, before I go even deeper into the details of it, there are very few websites saying, like, actually verbatim quoting what Sasha said, and a couple that were saying that honestly sounded very cheesy and like very unreliable. So what I am doing is I am taking into facts which I heard and read about from a lot of places and mixing them up and making a kind of the theory which made the most sense to me, which had like, you know, proper things to work around and with adequate length. So Sasha fell down and Lyudmila was like, all right, I'm going to stay with my son here and rest of you can like continue, dry off, gather firewood, and we'll come soon as he feels better or something. All right. But halfway to like walking to where they were supposed to walk at, the group decided to turn back. Why specifically, we do not know. Like, my head would say maybe they were concerned about Sasha's health. Some websites actually agree with this, that they were concerned about Lyudmila and her psychological stress that she would be going through. But whatever, they decided to turn back and went back to Lyudmila. So when they did, one of the group members, Tatiana, bought a tent and decided to erect it as a temporary shelter from the storm. But when they reached there, they saw that Alexander's eyes were now wide and dark, his pupils were dilated. And when Tatiana get to like try to move him, he was very unresponsive. But they anyway like dragged him to the tent and partially protected him. Valentina helped her to do that. But then Lyudmila asked Valentina to stop what she was doing and like commanded them to go to the trees and seek shelter, just like go away ASAP. Upon hearing this, the two girls, the 17-year-old and the 16-year-old, decided to walk. And now, yeah, when they decided to walk, the rest of the group stayed there helping Sasha and Lyudmila. But when Victoria proceeded to... What happened was that Victoria bit Valentina's hand in response as they were walking suddenly. And like this was after they had already gone like 500 meters through their trails, according to some sources. And then they say that some sources actually said that Valentina took her by her hair and started to drag her as she was walking. And I was like, yeah, I'm not sure who's more psychotic here, honestly. But and they said that they went to the trees and then they have a separate story. But the story which I'm going to be talking about is that already she bit her, Victoria bit Valentina. And maybe or maybe not, they had a cat fight there. But what happened is she decided to go back to Lyudmila and tell her that Valentina was being weird and I don't know what's happening to her. So they both started to run back to mom. I would call her mom. To Lyudmila. And when they returned, they came to a very, very startling scene. Tatiana was bent double and she was banging her own head over the rocks over and over again. Timur, the 15-year-old who was, he was gasping at his throat like he couldn't breathe and he then collapsed. Dennis, the 19-year-old, was in his senses when they came. And then he asked both of them to grab the sleeping supplies and stuff and run. And when she was doing that, she saw him again drop to the floor, to the sleeping bag that he was trying to retrieve. And he started to rip his clothing out, clasps at his clothes, and start to bleed from his eyes and foam at his mouth. When Valentina tried to help him, he fought her off and like, you know, the usual hysterics things. Now, when I think of this, I'm like, either they're possessed or they are into hysterics, like for the lack of a better word. So she saw that some of them were hiding behind rocks, some of them were just shouting, some had just like gotten inside their sleeping bags and like super duper panicked, and others were simply running around aimlessly. Val stood there hopeless as the whole group withered and they were banging their heads on the ground. They were bleeding from their eyes, nose, mouth and ears. They were foaming from their mouths and tearing their own clothes. Some of the members now in this point were like in partial undress and gradually stopped moving. Then she was like, you know what, I'm gonna run away and I'm gonna go to the place where I was supposed to go to. She went there, she spent her night in the forest, and it said that, and one of the statements that I also took help in translating, she said, I spent the night under a stone at the edge of the forest zone. The trees fell nearby like matches. Yes, I told you that was a smart move perhaps to be at the plateau. Some sources even said that, like in some of the verbatim things that she said, there was a difference that she said. When she went back to the group in the morning, some of them were almost alive, but some of them had totally died. That Lyudmila was alive and she even guided her how to go away from there. And she also scavenged from the remains of the bodies and theirs, and like basically took their supplies and decided to walk her path. Now what she started doing was that she started to follow the power lines down the mountain, hoping that she would find something or somebody would find her. And she found something, but it was an abandoned village, according to some sources. Then she found a river and began to follow it. By the end of 10th August, she found Ukrainian kayakers. She was found by Ukrainian kayakers who saw her t-shirt, white colored t-shirt, which she had hung out to dry. Now, There's a lot of problems in this case, which I'll come to pretty soon. But when all of this happened, she came back. The entire incident was, of course, reported to the police. But there was no official search that was conducted till the 24th, according to the majority of sources, 26th, according to two of them, and 21st, according to one of them. So that is like, if we are being optimistic, at least it took 10 days for the police to come there and like the rescue workers to come there and start finding the people and see what was happening. The autopsy report actually concluded that they had all died of hypothermia except Ludmila, who had died of a heart attack. They had signs such as bruised lungs, protein deficiency due to malnutrition, and it was like listed as a major factor which contributed to their death. Their death was ultimately ruled an accident, and compared to Valentina's statement, that really does not sound like an accident. But honestly, governments all around the world are extremely inept, and as I said, that I can see this man dressed in black in my eyes who's walking at me, not in the sexy way, but just to shoot my brains out. My problems with this, like whatever this little things happen, hypothermia, I'm not sure if that could have happened because, well, it was not that cold. I'm not a doctor. I mean, I do account that there could be the wind chill thing and stuff, but hypothermia was kind of unlikely. The thing which was even more unlikely, which actually made hypothermia bad enough for them, was the protein deficiency part. But they had been on the trek for less than 4 days. And if all of them had protein deficiency, that is kind of stupid. And if all of them actually had protein deficiency, why did Valentina not have it? Because since they were as a group and they were hanging around with each other for a very long time. So that is one major problem. And Ludmila dying of a heart attack, that is obvious, since like her almost son died in such a gruesome manner, it's obvious that she was grief stricken. And if that happened, I wouldn't be extremely surprised. Anyway, the details of the bodies after 10 days were found in a manner that the corpses were obviously bloated and swollen. They were partially undressed, and that is basically the way of saying that they had torn each other's clothes off or their own clothes off. Some of them were only wearing undergarments at this point. Some of them did not have shoes, and it was basically they were spread around like in random patterns, the five of them. Their eyes and tongues were actually missing, and though this sounds like what, but it's most probably scavengers who came down to eat them, because it's a soft tissue and it is one of the most important, like it's one of the first few things that the scavengers come and bite. Now, back to my problems with everything, it's like the 17-year-old survived, and she was basically second to the weakest, if I can be like that bold, or not bold, that wrong politically, but yeah. And like the proponents of the theory say that ripping the clothing off is an extreme version of hypothermia, and they could have suffered the extreme version because of protein deficiency. But as I said, protein deficiency and anemia for this group is highly, 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 highly unlikely. They literally collected herbs before getting to it just to be sure about everything. Do you really think they wouldn't have been eating well, for fuck's sake? But and then a lot of people just say that Valentina is basically lying after 25 years for notoriety. So yeah, but for the purpose of this podcast, I would believe her, because that is the only way we'll be able to cover all bases. Now, there are some people, as usual, who were blaming Ludmila that we don't care how she died, we don't care if she died. All we care about is that she chose the wrong place to rest. And we've already covered that. But I mean, I don't really care. Victim blaming is like, oh, baby, really? You are the one who has a problem, not the people who died. Yeah, right, priorities. But yeah, and there was another theory which basically goes around like the government was doing some kind of military experiment there, the usual jazz. But the two main loopholes of anything related to military secrecy or any of those things is Kamarjawang is a very, very accessible area. People traverse this entire place via airplanes, helicopters, hiking, and so on and so forth. So any government in their right mind will not really do anything like that.
And second thing, and I when I said any government in their right mind, I just realized all the governments are basically stupid and run by idiotic people. So no government is in the right mind, really. But anyway, so when this entire thing was happening, Kamar, there was another YouTuber who went on to say that there was a gas which was in notoriety or like was very popular in this time. That was the Novichok gas, which is one of the most deadliest nerve agents which could have existed at the moment. And exposure to this gas would have caused rapid death, similar to what happened with the hikers. But this theory also has the same issue as the first one. Why such a publicly accessible spot, and why did Valentina survive? Though the second why the specific spot, a lot of people, smart people, basically say that it's because these toxins got mixed up with some kind of water, air current, air draft, cyclone, like a lot of bad things which happened simultaneously, and voila. But these theories, as I told you, are available everywhere. And this specific one is on Medium and you can read through that. And then also my theory that no government in their right mind would actually do it. But then I'm like, all governments are basically more dysfunctional than families. So I wouldn't be like really surprised if they did it. But yeah, that's it. Then some other people are like, since they were eating so many like herbs and collecting those things, maybe they had something toxic, some kind of toxic mushroom, or had toxic water or something. Or simply Valentina has PTSD and does not know what actually happened in the entire incident. So there's that. But one thing, my own theory, like now that's it for the facts. So I was researching the Serbian celestials and I stumbled across this celestial called Hala, Ala, Alentina, Alciana, or like among other words. And her appearance is debated, but she is like often called as a woman in white or a white snake, serpentine, and among other things. So Ala is a celestial which lives in the clouds, the lakes, the groves, and the mountains, the caves, and old gigantic trees. She hates humans. If their pronouns is she, I'm gonna go with they for like better purposes. They are usually most active during the summer months, and their main work is to destroy crops and thus not considered like good for the human beings. They say that they suck energy from the crops and such, and if a farmer tries to stop them, they make their eyes bleed, they eat them alive, they make them that they scream a lot. And she tortures them by riding them like horses. And I was like, riding them like horses. Okay, kinky, but yeah. And but like, she does not really fall into the category of a celestial who could have caused this entire thing, but she's kind of close. But there's an obvious paranormal thing to it. Like, I wouldn't go ahead and deny it. People are like, of course they can be ghosts, because this place is actually often been seen that there have been other cryptids such as the Bigfoot and other things here. And Salbic mountains are ancient places. Ancient places have ancient energies. So that is my own theory. And yet again, this theory is also not well researched. I could have researched more into Salvic demons and daemons and celestials and gods and goddesses. But most of it was in Serbian and I was not really able. It's not that I was not really able to. I am too lazy to do that. So I did not. But yeah, in short, I decided to add a celestial here to give it the paranormal feel, but this is not really a paranormal episode. But yeah, that's it, and that it would be the end of the podcast. I was gonna end it, okay, bye, but then I realized there needs to be end credits. How many times do I need to remind myself of that? The podcast is hosted by Koi On Air. It's co-produced with Nefix. The music is by Lil Addy. You can follow me on Instagram and Twitter by the handle Koi On Air. And my Twitter is being actually fun. Oh my god, I fell down, kind of. I was supposed to tell you that the other day I was doing like this chakra meditation and I even tweeted about it. And I was doing it and my cat decided to take a dump on my pillow. So that happened on my Twitter. So you should really go follow it. It
it tells a lot more about my life than you would ever expect to. But that's it. Was it it? Oh, and you can send me your listener stories and stuff on koi@madebynfx.com. I'll be looking forward to hearing from you, and roll in the end credits.